This is the News at 5 on WRKC Wilkes-Barre.
Good evening. This is the WRKC News at 5. I'm Program Director John Flynn. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's top stories are about the Iram Temple restoration and a special honor given to a chef here at King's. We will then listen to this week's economic news in the Business Beat, a musical artist spotlight, the NFL's controversy over the national anthem, and get the forecast for the rest of the week. The Iram Shrine, located on North Franklin Street, was used as an arts and theater center, but now they are raising funds to see whether or not the historic building can be restored. Station manager Katie Pugh talked with leaders of this movement.
The Iram Temple, right next to King's College on North Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre, is one of the last examples of Moorish Revival architecture in the United States. Originally a cultural hub for the arts and entertainment, the temple is now in limbo after being shut down in the 1980s after the restoration of the F.M. Kirby Center on Public Square. The lavish building has large, open spaces that can potentially accommodate thousands. Kristen Weilich is the president of the latest attempt to restore the building, the Iram Temple Restoration Foundation. He discussed his plans for the space.
The project is to take the existing auditorium. It was actually from the 1930s till the 1980s, it was the primary theater in Wilkes-Barre. But when the Kirby got refurbished, it really put it out of business overnight. So what we want to do is return the main auditorium to its original flat configuration. That way you have a big 6,000 square foot open room where you can have weddings, you could have different types of vendor events, flea markets, farmers markets.
Weilich explains that he wants to appeal to a certain market.
Half of the bands touring today don't want seats in the main theater. Like jam band, hard rock and heavy metal, electronic dance music, like these make up a huge portion of the touring population, and they just don't want seats. So we want to appeal to that. It would be a truly complimentary venue to the Kirby, would not compete with the Kirby in any way.
Wilkes-Barre City Councilman Tony Brooks is also a key figure in the restoration effort, focusing on the building's historical value.
It has to do with my whole vision of what Wilkes-Barre and what a community should be like. And part of that, for me, is historic preservation. I think what separates Wilkes-Barre from Scranton, from Allentown, from Philadelphia, from any other city, from each other, is its historic buildings. That's what makes it unique. And to make Wilkes-Barre a really beautiful community is to have to preserve its uniqueness.
Councilman Brooks believes the Iram Temple is part of a broader historical value for the region.
There are so many different sites that one can visit in northeastern Pennsylvania, and they can all be linked together in a series of, quite honestly, a couple days that people from New York and Philadelphia, all over the country, the world, can come to see and experience. So we have a great industrial history to tell. And what we like to add to that gem is the Iram Temple, the only building in America that looks like that. And that would be a draw for people to come see.
The councilman talked of economic and cultural success stories of historic preservation.
It's a one-of-a-kind gem of the area. It's history, and history should be preserved. So much of our history is being torn down around us. It's able to be restored. It's able to be saved. I think we should put every effort into doing that. We don't need another parking lot.
Kathleen Smith of the Shawnee chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution discussed the importance of preserving this building.
Look, in the 1970s, you would not want to go to Jim Thorpe. Jim Thorpe is now a textbook case of a turnaround of a couple generations that now has a little town that looks like a postcard. It looks like you're underneath a Christmas tree. It is an adorable place, but they came together and did that. We can do that in Wilkes-Barre. It just has to be the willpower, vision, and the leadership to take it to the next level.
You can donate to the cause at luzernefoundation.org under the Iram Temple Restoration tab. For the WRKC News at 5, I'm station manager Katie Pugh.
Chartwell's, the dining service that serves King's, recently named King's chef Sarah Bodner as the National Chef of the Year. Social media and promotions director Jamie Rosenkranz caught up with the cook as she revels in this distinct honor.
Recently featured in a Times Leader article, Sarah Bodner is the executive chef for Chartwell Dining Services at King's College. She got to tell us about the awards she recently won.
I won two really important awards for our company. The first award that I won was the Mid-Atlantic Chef of the Year. So that first one is a pool of about 30 chefs compete to win for the Mid-Atlantic region. It's about three states. And then the most prestigious award that I've won is the Chartwell's National Chef of the Year. So all of the winners of the regions kind of go head-to-head. And I was chosen the winner nationally for this year.
Next, Bodner told us about how important it is to have a lot of food options at school for students to choose from.
I think that's probably one of the things that students use to judge dining services in general. If you come onto campus, if you're judging campus versus campus, having options so that you can eat something that you want to be eating, whether you want to splurge or have something healthy, and especially with student schedules.
When Bodner came to King's College, she wanted to make sure that students had healthy options to choose from, too.
For me, one of the biggest things that we pushed when we took over is making sure we always have fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, eliminating like the frozen and the canned products. And then this way, students can choose. If they're having a day where they want to splurge on chicken tenders and fries, you can. But then about 50% of our menu is healthy and balanced at all times.
Bodner started in the food service at a very young age. Next, she'll tell us all about
I started working when I was 14. You know, out of necessity, my parents didn't want me getting in trouble or anything over the summer. So I started working right outside of New York City in a little cafe. I waited tables, I did dishes, and I worked there all throughout high school. And I started to work with kitchen preparations in the back and doing catering. And then I went to culinary school. I went to Johnson & Wales in Providence, Rhode Island. So I have 3 degrees from there. I have one in culinary arts, and then one in food service management, and one in beverage service management. Love school. Pay for school. I worked in kitchens the whole time. So continued to work in kitchens in New England, which was really fun and a different experience. And that's where I found my love for seasonal and local products. Where I lived in Rhode Island, there were a lot of farms and a lot of artisanal handcrafted food products. So it was fun to kind of get introduced to that. From there, after I graduated, I actually started to work for Chartwell's at Marywood University in Scranton. I started as their catering chef and then became their executive chef for 4 years. I left Marywood to open my own catering company in Scranton. My husband and I own Harvest Catering and Events in Dunmore. And then I came back last year to rejoin Chartwell's and open King's.
Next, Bodner tells us a little bit more about her catering service she runs with her husband.
My husband is a chef, too. We worked together at Patzel's Restaurant in Clark Summit before it closed. It was AAA fine dining, so lots of scratch-made products. We decided we wanted to take it to the next level, so we opened our catering service to do all local prepared foods. Everything's from scratch. We go off-site, so that means we pick up a kitchen and set up in somebody's home or a hall or a tent in a field. So kind of like a big adventure every time we do an event. We're full service, so we provide the staff, we provide bartenders, linen, that kind of thing.
Bodner said she can't take all the credit, though. Her employees are a big part of the reason she's gotten this far.
I couldn't have won Chef of the Year without the whole team at King's. I had the most amazing staff. They were really adaptable with change. They put their faith in me when I changed the culinary program to try new things, to learn new skills. And without them, I would never be where I am now.
Signing off for WRKC, this is Social Media and Promotions Director Jamie Rosenkranz.
Coming up next, we listen to Josh Frankevich and his weekly business beat, Get an Artist Spotlight, and the recent NFL controversy over the Star Spangled Banner.
Hop down the road to see Frog and Toad. The King's College Theater Department presents A Year of Frog and Toad. Kids of all ages will find this riveting and unforgettable. A Year of Frog and Toad, September 28th through October 30th at 7 p.m. and September 30th and October 1st at 1 p.m. For reservations, email boxoffice@kings.edu.
Attention all Monarch football fans. Monarch football is back exclusively on 88.5 WRKC, King's College Radio. The Monarchs return to McCarthy Stadium this Saturday at 1 p.m. to face MAC conference leader Albright College. Dan Stokes and Joe Kelly will bring you the action from the field to your radios only on 88.5 WRKC. Tune in Saturday at 1 p.m. as King's takes on Albright in a MAC conference matchup. Let's go Monarchs!
The News at 5 continues on 88.5 WRKC, Wilkes-Barre.
Hello, this is Joshua Frankevich with your King's Business Beat, the U.S. in review. The Federal Reserve left rates unchanged in September, as was widely expected. The committee announced that they will initiate their balance sheet drawdown in October. The plan is to only reinvest principal payments, which will start at $10 billion per month, and increase every 3 months until the payments hit $50 billion. The Fed is comfortable with the strength of the U.S. economy. In the September summary of economic projections, participants expected stronger real GDP growth in 2017, with the projection rising to 2.4% from 2.2% at the June meeting. Member projections also centered on a slightly higher pace in 2019, now anticipating a 3% growth rate. Persistently disappointing inflation readings brought down the consumer price index again, and the committee now expects inflation to take longer to hit the 2% target, which they expect will happen in 2019 rather than 2018. The FOMC made clear in the statement that the temporary negative shocks from hurricanes are unlikely to derail economic growth in the medium term. The National Housing Index fell 3 points in September as Hurricanes Harvey and Irma hit the two largest states for home building, understandably dampening confidence for home builders. Florida and Texas were 25% of the single-family home building markets through July. The absence of the substantial activity in coming months will certainly be felt, and the corresponding demand for construction materials and labor to rebuild is likely to have ripple effects in unaffected markets in the form of higher construction costs. August existing sales were also slightly impacted by Harvey, which arrived towards the end of the month and likely delayed some contract closings. U.S. stocks still remain high as investors wait for President Trump to outline his new tax plan later in the day. President Trump will call for slashing tax rates on businesses and the wealthy as part of the new plan, which, if passed, would be his first significant legislative win since taking office in January. Yesterday, the U.S. Commerce Department slapped preliminary anti-subsidy duties on the Canadian company Bombardier's C-Series jets after rival Boeing accused Canada and the United Kingdom of unfairly subsidizing the aircraft, a move likely to strain trade relations between the two neighbors. The proposed 220% import tariff could threaten Bombardier jobs in Belfast, where the majority of the manufacturing takes place. Sir Michael Fallon, the UK's Secretary of Defense, has said that Boeing's trade dispute with Bombardier, quote-unquote, could jeopardize its defense contracts with the UK government. In 2016, Boeing won a contract to supply 50 Apache helicopters to the British Army. Prime Minister Theresa May said she was bitterly disappointed over the U.S. Department of Commerce's proposal to impose the tax. She said the U.K. would work with Bombardier to protect vital jobs. The U.K. government and trade unions fear the imposition of tariffs could make the Canadian firm question whether to remain in Northern Ireland, where it employs 4,100 of its 28,000-strong workforce. The Global Review. American ride-sharing company Uber has seen a number of overseas setbacks recently. In London, Mayor Sadiq Khan has imposed new sanctions on Uber, stating that the city's transportation authority has declined to renew Uber's operating license, citing the company's approach to criminal offense reporting and driver background checks, and Grayball, the software program Uber has used to evade regulators in the past. Uber said yesterday that it would stop service in Montreal and the Quebec province next month rather than accept new government rules, the second setback in a week for the ride-hailing service's international operations. The general manager of Uber Montreal said yesterday that the company could not accept the government's plan to increase the minimum training for Uber drivers to 35 hours, up from 20 hours. The higher level matches the rule in Montreal for taxi drivers. Unless the government withdraws its plans, Uber would quit the province on October 14th. Uber has about 10,000 drivers in Montreal. The general manager said that the increased training would make it difficult to recruit new drivers, particularly those who only want to work part-time. The Bank of Japan quickly elected to keep its stimulus programs unchanged in an 8-to-1 vote. The move comes amid a broad shift in sentiment by many of the world's other major central banks as economies in the developed world have begun to accelerate again. Purchasing managers' indices for the Eurozone continued to climb in September. Data showed activity strengthening both the service and manufacturing sectors. Real retail sales in the United Kingdom also posted a beat, rising much faster than consensus expected in August. Non-store retailing growth continued surging, rising 5% in the month. And the Canadian Consumer Price Index showed signs of modest acceleration in August. The Bank of Canada has hiked rates twice this year amid a pickup in economic growth that has driven GDP to 3.7% as of the second quarter of this year. With two meetings left this year, the Bank of Canada will be watching closely to see if the acceleration in the economy is followed by further acceleration in prices. Thus far, price growth appears quite tame. And this has been your King's Business Beat with Joshua Frankevich.
What's going on? This is Sam Zavada, the music director at WRKC, and you're listening to an artist spotlight. Tonight, we're going to hear an established artist that just recently released an album that soared right up the college radio charts. I'm talking about Arcade Fire and their new album, Everything Now. Led by Wynn Butler, the group has earned a reputation as being one of the most innovative and acclaimed musical artists of the 21st century. Their career trajectory is still looking up, and based on their body of work, their story already looks like it's poised to end at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The three tracks you're about to hear are the first three from Everything Now. They are the title track, Signs of Life, and Creature Comfort. You just heard an artist spotlight based around Arcade Fire, one of the great bands of our time. Those were the first three tracks of their new album, Everything Now. If you enjoyed the selections tonight, make sure to always tune in to the WRKC News at 5 to hear the best music in college radio. I've been Sam Zavada, the music director at WRKC. Have a wonderful night.
Week 3 in the NFL saw all 32 teams choosing to protest during the national anthem. Teams either chose to stay in the locker room, take a knee, or lock arms in solidarity to protest the displeasure with President Donald Trump and his comments on the NFL at his Alabama rally. The peaceful protest has created a controversy that has left the NFL fanbase in shambles. Dr. Dave Sosar, Associate Professor of Political Science at King's College, spoke about the protests and their impact.
Whether you agree or disagree with what Colin Kaepernick did last year, it was his right of free speech to give his symbolic speech, if you would, by taking the knee. What has happened, unfortunately, right now is that I don't know that many people could tell you what is the basic premise of the protest. Are some people protesting religious ideas? Are some people protesting police actions or a police violence of some sort? Are there people who are talking about racial issues? Are there people who are talking about minority rights? And I don't know that there are a lot of people who are symbolically taking knees right now that could actually tell you why they are taking the knees that they do. It is their right to. For every action that one does, especially in a symbolic protest, somebody should have their ideas and their actions based in values and true beliefs that they firmly are holding to, which is why they do what they do. Because in a protest, what you are doing, remember, is normally going against the norm, going against what the majority of the people would say and feel. And if you take notice, fans have shown that displeasure quite a bit as well. The ratings for the NFL, according to what I just read today, are down 11% for the week. That means money in people's pockets. That means owners are not going to be making money. That means players are not going to be making the money that they had hoped to in the future.
Dr. Sosar spoke about the impact President Donald Trump had on the NFL players' protest.
There are better things for him to be spending some of his time with than probably getting involved in this, but we all know from having watched it for the last 9 months at least that this is a president that wears many of his views and ideas on his sleeve and gets involved in things with the famous tweets, and he shows that, and he shows it very often. I think there are more important things right now to be considering. We've got hurricanes and people suffering. We've got international tensions going on in the Middle East, in Asia with Korea. Certainly our relations with Russia are not good. We've got terrorism, which is striking in places throughout Europe. So there are things that we do need to spend our time on, maybe more wisely. But does he have a right? If I give the right of free speech to others, I've got to give President his right of free speech on Twitter or whatever it is as well. I think this has gotten blown way out of proportion. I think there are a lot of people who are doing things without thinking about it right now, and it's become the thing to do. And I would hope that we could get past this, but we are in an age. We're trying to divide ourselves on more things than what we can find in common. And that's not good. That's not a good thing for the country to have.
Dr. Sosar mentions how we should be united as a nation and how the NFL should unite together.
Players who are supposed to be intelligent individuals, mature individuals, paid very good salaries. The owners of teams and the officials themselves can come up with some kind of agreement to say, look, you know, we are in this together. God forbid something terrible should happen within this country. You will see people all of a sudden unite like they never have before. We shouldn't have to have something so terrible happen that brings us together when we should all be able to work together on things like this a whole lot easier. So politically speaking, is that or is that as much social? I think it's a social thing that we need to deal with as well as a political.
For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Sports Director Dan Stokes.
And now the weather. Today's high temperature reached 90 degrees for the fourth consecutive day. It broke the daily record of 85 degrees set in 1998. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny and much cooler with a high of 71, and expect partly cloudy skies Friday with highs around 70. The campus ministry team is hosting a game night with food, fun, board games, and cards this evening at 8 p.m. in the Cheval Center. The Red Cross is sponsoring a blood drive tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the third floor of the campus center. Performances of the musical A Year with Frog and Toad begin tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. in the Maffey Theater in the Administration Building. The next meeting of Women of the Crown takes place tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. at the SF Hall lobby. There will be a study abroad financial aid session Friday afternoon at 12 p.m. in the Friedman, Room 117. Stay tuned for this week's episode of In the Clinch. This has been the WRKC News at 5. I'm Program Director John Flynn. Have a wonderful Wednesday, good night, and good luck.
This has been the News at 5 on WRKC, Radio King's College, Wilkes-Barre.